I'm Mike Kamate.
I'm Jacob Tender.
Welcome back to Bantha Fodder. It's been a long time. I feel like when we started planning this episode out, it was, you know, a month ago, and there was a lot of cool Star Wars stuff in the news. And
yeah.
Do you want to see how much of that we can recap in like 5 minutes?
yeah. I mean, we can try. I guess, where should we start?
Oh, I want to start with Donald Glover getting lunch with Billy Dee Williams, because that was absurd.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, we saw Alden Ehrenreich getting lunch with Harrison Ford maybe, I don't know, it was a couple of months ago now, I think. But I think it's really cool when actors do this, just kind of like meet the people that originally played the character to kind of get a feel for it.
Okay, so you have like a view of this, how they're like, this is awesome. And I'm going to take my typical stance and say, this is really weird. And it seems like very, it seems like very Hollywood publicist type thing, you know, like when they're setting up like Taylor Swift on a date, like, okay, now you're going to date this pop star for a little bit and you have to go in public. You guys need to hold hands for this long. I feel like that's what this is. I feel like it's like a photo op. I feel like it's a way to generate buzz for the movie. I don't feel like they actually need to go out to a public space to discuss Lando Calrissian and how it, what it means to act this part. Like, are they really getting anything discussed while they have like a bunch of teenagers or like, or older folks too, just like flipping their camera phones out and like recording them at lunch? Those pictures look really uncomfortable. Like,
okay, well, first of all, I don't know if it's a PR stunt. They're not going to like super high profile restaurants. In a lot of these photos, it looks like they're just going to diners and they're just kind of tucked into corners. But I mean, if you were playing a part, I mean, have you done any acting? Mike, do you have any acting experience?
Anybody who knows me very well knows I've acted a couple times and knows it has not been good.
Okay. All right. Well, if you were, you know, a professional actor, you're somebody who took the roles that they're playing very seriously, wouldn't you want to meet the person that perhaps originally played that role? You know, if you're playing... I'm sure this is something that happens on Broadway. If somebody can get advice from somebody that played, you know, a certain character on a Broadway play, don't you think they would try to take some advice on how to, you know, bring that character to life? And in Star Wars, like, why wouldn't you? I mean, why wouldn't you talk to Harrison Ford? Why wouldn't you talk to Billy Dee Williams about what it was that they did to make that character the character? Because when you're a brand new actor that's tasked with playing this classic icon of science fiction film history, like, you have a lot of pressure on you. You got people looking at you and they're going to be comparing you. No doubt they're going to be comparing you to the original. So why not talk to the original and say, hey, what advice do you have for me to play this role in a way that people would find it not only entertaining, but believable to the character that you created? I feel like that would be hugely beneficial.
I agree with you. I would absolutely seek guidance from somewhere, someone much wiser than I, perhaps who has played the part before me, but I would do it in the privacy of my own home or in the privacy of their own home.
Okay, but actors have to eat lunch too, man.
Yeah, get like their chef or whatever. They're famous actors. There's, you know, you're not telling me that Donald Glover can't order Seamless from his apartment or wherever he lives, or like Billy Dee Williams absolutely has a live-in chef. There's no way Billy Dee Williams doesn't have a live-in chef.
We don't know the whole story. That could be Billy Dee Williams' daily spot. He could be a regular at that cafe. We have no clue.
He's probably a regular in his living room as well, too. And I think they could probably have a more private meeting there and discussing the nuances of playing Lando Calrissian. Listen, I think it's fine for two adults to go out and have lunch and discuss business, but to me it just like, it just seems, it's so public, it's so weird to me. It was absurd, you know, to like see like the cell phone photos of it and just being like, wow, this looks really uncomfortable for them. I wonder if they're getting any work done right now.
Well, to the Hollywood Reporter, Billy Dee did kind of like talk about that meeting.
What did he say?
Well, he said, Hollywood Reporter said, Donald Glover recently said that he wasn't as cool as you. Did you give him any pointers on being cool? Billy Dee Williams responded, well, nobody's as cool as me. Laughs. That's a tough way to go. No, I'm only joking. Donald is eclectic. I think that's really important, particularly to the character of Lando. He's a particularly eclectic in the way he approaches his art. When I talked to him, I really got the sense of him being a worldly person. So, you know, Hollywood Reporter follows up on this, and they asked if, like, saying goodbye to a character or watching him take on life after you, you know, what if that was hard or not. And Billy Dee said, well, eventually something else has to happen with it, but I'm not saying goodbye to the character. It's still very much a part of my life. I created the character. So, I, you know, it is like a super important thing to Billy Dee Williams. And I think maybe, you know, I would assume that Donald Glover probably wanted that meeting more than Billy Dee did, but I'm sure Billy Dee Williams wanted that too, in a way. You know, when you have a character that close to you, and such a huge part of your life, I'm sure you want to talk to the person that's going to be taking it over.
Agreed. Yeah, I think it's totally reasonable for them to talk, for sure.
Yeah.
So that was bit one of news. What else do we want to talk about?
Well, Disney Star Wars Land is opening up in 2019, and I'm ridiculously excited for that, and I think you and I should get tickets.
No, I know. We're definitely going down at the same time together. You know, just
that would be perfect.
Holding hands on all the rides.
I'll bring my portable recorder and we can record like little bits here and there about all the new rides.
We can just podcast as what, like every single, you know, every single Star Wars podcast is also going to be down there at sometime close to opening. Here's what the thing is, we have to get famous enough with this podcast, which, you know, at the rate we're going, we're definitely, you know, generating the content necessary. we have to get as famous with this for this podcast just so they offer us, you know, like, oh, be the first to enter Star Wars Disneyland or whatever it's called.
See, we should have been working harder up to this point.
But still have 2 years to go. You know, we get 2 years to build this into something that's desirable.
All right, that's the goal. That's the goal.
To get passes to Star Wars Land.
This is an interesting thing, though, because I feel like this might tie in with the Star Wars Celebration in 2019, because I think Celebration is happening in Orlando this year. I could be wrong.
Mm.
I didn't get tickets, but I'm almost positive that's what's happening. But they're not from what it seems, they're not having Celebration in 2018. It looks like they're skipping a year and they're going to go straight to the year with the final episode of this current trilogy. Mm. So I'm wondering if they're going to do it in Orlando again, and if they'll kind of like pair that up with the opening of Star Wars Land, because I think that would be really cool. And I've wanted to go to a Celebration for years, so I think it'd be really cool to do both.
Oh, it makes so much sense. You open the theme park after at the time that the plot is completed. So, mm-hmm. you know, whatever's happening in this trilogy, you can make a ride out of it and sell right. merchandise about it. Yeah, oh, that's brilliant. It's very brilliant. I see what you did there. Good job, Disney. Way to go.
What else?
More fascinating than that, to me, is the that whole thing we spent speculating the last episode about The Last Jedi being plural or singular. It was kind of just laid to bed, I think, right?
I don't know. Go on.
Well, the foreign language posters for all of the Last Jedi things in various languages indicate, you know, that the word Jedi is plural in those various translations, you know.
That's true. Do you think that means for sure that it's
essentially all the speculation we did last episode about, you know, like Rey being something else, you know? Well, I don't know. We don't know who they're referring to still. Nothing has changed. We just know that there is more than one Jedi in this movie.
Well, I mean, kind of obviously, right? I mean, of course there's going to be more than one. I thought it was kind of funny to think that it was just the singular one in a way, because like, I mean, you've got Rey at this point, like she's going to be a Jedi, whether you call her a Jedi or not, as far as like the understanding goes in the Star Wars universe, she is a Jedi for all intents and purposes. She wields the blade. She has force powers. She is a Jedi.
She is. But we speculated she wasn't.
I know. Well, we waffle.
We definitely waffle. We're pro wafflers. We're ego.
We are ego.
On some similar note, Rian Johnson, I really liked what he said. What's this quote? Somebody's like, oh, Rian Johnson opens up about the meaning of The Last Jedi, and he goes, yes, it means it's the final Jedi.
Oh yeah, he was kind of going back and forth with this one user who didn't seem to understand that like final meant last, like they're synonymous words. Like he didn't seem to pick up on that. So
no, he thought everybody's like the previous Jedi. Oh yeah, clearly the title means Luke, because the last Jedi was Luke, you know, he was the previous Jedi in the series.
I don't think that's what he meant. He followed up on that, and he's like, you know that last and final are synonymous words, right?
No, but I mean, the user thought that it was the previous Jedi. Just to clarify, we're using last as in final, not last as in the aforementioned.
It's all, who cares? I mean, who cares about that last episode we did? I mean, I had a crap ton of downloads, but everybody listening to that, you know, just forget about it.
Should we just take
about
that? Let's pull it off the feed.
Let's
just put in.
Let's just get rid of it.
Let's put in the Cantina van for 30 minutes and list over. So what else is there happening? Something else happened.
I'd be remiss if I didn't mention Inferno Squad, which is a new book that's coming out. It's being written by Christy Golden, and I'm actually really, really excited for this book.
So why are you so excited about this book?
I don't know. It's different. It's different than something that's come out so far. I mean, we have got kind of like similar stories. Christy Golden did write Dark Disciple, by the way, which is, you know, kind of based on some unused aspects of Star Wars The Clone Wars, which is really great. Animated TV series, which is being taken off Netflix this month, which is a huge shame.
No, I'm so close to finishing it.
Oh, you haven't finished yet?
Dude, I've been busting through like 10 episodes a week. Just wake up in the morning, grab my bowl of cereal, sit down, watch an episode of The Clone Wars. But I'm still in like season 5. Need to finish.
Oh, man. But no, there have been some stories that are kind of similar. You know, like Battlefront Twilight Companies has been out. You know, it's kind of based around a more of like a just like a band of rebels and more of like a tactical war zone type of experience. And I feel like this might kind of be what that is, but from the opposite point of view. So, you know, the mission of this Inferno Squad is to infiltrate and eliminate the remnants of Saw Gerrera's partisan group. So, you know, the rebels of the rebels, so to speak.
Yeah.
I'm just excited about it. It sounds different, and I think it's really cool, and Christy Golden is a good writer, so I'm stoked for that. But what I'm more stoked for is an update on Mike Comite's Star Wars reading update. Where are you? I think last we heard, you were still reading Bloodline. Have you finished?
No, absolutely not.
All right, we're going on like 4 months of this, Mike.
Might be more than that. I stopped counting after a while. It's just, you know, it's one of those, I gotta do more laundry. That's really the key. I read when I'm doing laundry, and I guess I just need to wash my clothes more. That's kind of
that's probably not a bad idea.
Yeah, I should probably, just to be around other people in general, I probably should do that, and also to finish Star Wars, I should wash my clothes.
Well, you know, please finish it. I like our book episodes. We've only done a couple of them so far. I think two. We've done two of them so far, and I like doing those. I think they're great.
Okay,
but I'm reading.
We'll make it
happen.
I'm
a slow reader. And I've read more Star Wars books than you have.
You're right. I gotta put in the time, and now I have it, so that's fine. I'll put in the time.
At least finish Bloodline, and then we can decide something else. You know the Aftermath trilogy has since ended.
Well, I heard
two books have come out since we talked about the first one.
That's true, and I actually got an inkling to finish it. I don't know why. I feel like I saw a guy reading it on the subway. That's really what piqued my interest again. He was reading a hardcover edition of Aftermath, and just I was like, I, you know, 7 a.m. on the train platform, like, what is going on here? I know. How is he focusing? How is he not falling asleep standing on subway platform at the crack of dawn?
We need to put these books to use. I have an entire bookshelf that is full of Star Wars books at this point. I need to actually build a second shelf because I am out of space.
All right, I'll continue to download them on my iPad. All right, so that is a little bit more than 5 minutes of news. Is there anything else you want to add?
No, I'm good on that. I think there's, you know, it's kind of that slow period. It's right after our Star Wars movie. Celebration is coming up pretty soon, so we'll probably get some more information there and possibly a trailer.
Oh my gosh, that's what they're waiting for. You know, it's kind of late. You know, when did we get the first teaser? It was like January. It was like a year beforehand. A year before episode 7.
Yeah, I mean,
7.
You expected the Super Bowl, and I didn't watch it. I was just kind of like refreshing my Twitter feed just in case the Star Wars trailer dropped, but I didn't hear anything about it beforehand, so I figured that wasn't going to happen.
Yeah, Super Bowl was pretty good this year as far as the game went, but not so great for Star Wars trailers.
Yeah.
Anyway.
All right, what are we talking about tonight?
Oh, we are talking about something that I stumbled onto by complete accident.
What's that?
Well, contrary to everything I stand for normally, I was working and I was like, you know what I really want to do tonight? I want to watch episode 7 again. And I was like, okay, well, you know, isn't, I read, this is how out of touch I am. I don't know what's on Netflix at any given time. So I just, so I was like, okay, well, there has to be, like, you know, there's a partnership now with like Disney and Netflix. So I bet it's on Netflix. And I thought I heard someone say it was on there. So I just jump onto Netflix, type in Star Wars. Nothing comes up except for the Clone Wars, obviously. Right. And this one other movie, called Elstree 1976. Mm-hmm. And I had not heard of this movie. It was a documentary and it was magical.
Did you like it?
I really did like it, you know? We can get into why much later, but I guess I kind of just want to review this movie and talk about what it meant to me and what it kind of, how it fits into Star Wars in general and the kind of what we do as well as podcasters.
Okay, I'm in. I watched it. You made me watch it. I started it up. I watched it all the way through while I was working on some client work, and I thought it was interesting, definitely interesting. I didn't think it was like super entertaining,
yeah,
but it did give me an interesting insight to some of these characters that you don't really think about in the original Star Wars movies.
Yeah, I guess we should talk about what this documentary was. This was not just like, this was not the making of Star Wars. This was the making of Star Wars through the eyes of extras and walk-on roles, just the people that you see in the background. And I guess maybe a little bit more than that too. But yeah, these are just people that were in the first Star Wars movie and were kind of just brought into something that they had no idea what they were getting into. You know, they're just bit parts. They're just little, like, you know, stage actors and commercial actors, struggling actors. Some of them weren't even actors, I feel like. They were just like friends that ended up on set from what, you know, you learn from them. But they just, they stumbled onto this production and became a part of history. And I thought it was fascinating.
That is an interesting idea. I mean, like, when you think about these people that this documentary is centered on, you know, they're actors, they're normal people that grew up in a world pre-Star Wars. And for a lot of people, even today, that probably doesn't mean anything. But for people like us that obviously like to talk about Star Wars and like to continue to absorb everything that goes on in the Star Wars universe, it's kind of a fascinating study to just imagine what it would be like in a world before Star Wars. And these people get to be in it and they have no idea what they're in, you know? Some of, yeah, these people think they're just in, like, you know, some science fiction TV serial. And turns out they're in this gigantic movie that's just going to take over the world and it's going to last for decades and make billions of dollars. It's fascinating to get the perspectives and see some of the early, you know, some behind the scenes shots of these people before Star Wars was a thing.
I think it's cool that you mentioned how much it blew up because, and that they had no idea at the time, because you'd think that the movie blowing up would be like the best things possible for their careers. But as this movie kind of illustrates, they're like, it's a weird spot that they get put in because of the success of this film. I just feel like I have to comment on kind of like the look of this documentary and kind of, mm-hmm, things that go into it before we get into too much of the content. But as far as just watching this movie, it's very well shot. It is, the movie opens with the kind of the way they introduce these characters or these human beings, these real people, these actors, is kind of comparing them to the characters they played in Star Wars. And so you get these macro shots, these really close up shots of these like pristine action figures. You know, I don't know if like these were pulled from some archive or something like that.
These were actually mine.
Oh, those were yours?
Yeah, these were my action figures.
They pulled them. The Elstree producer just called you up. Jake, can you unbox those for a second?
Well, yeah. I mean, he just sent me an email. It's like, hey, are you busy on Friday? Can you bring your Vader case? And I'm like, yeah, no problem.
No problem. You're a sport about that, taking them out of the box and everything like that. I mean, watching this documentary at first, the fact that I searched Star Wars on Netflix and found it was kind of the giveaway, obviously, but, and reading the description of it. But if you were just watching this film, you know, stumbling through it on like a hungover Sunday or something like that, if it was on television and just ended up in the middle of this, you wouldn't know it was Star Wars at first if it wasn't for these shots. Like, they don't really mention Star Wars right away at all. You know, they're referring to this vague thing, like this production shooting in London and other spots, Tunisia, and just they definitely give a good sense of like a not mystery, but just like a unveiling it. Like I was not positive that they were going to even be allowed to show, to like associate themselves with Star Wars. I wasn't sure how approved this documentary was, you know?
Yeah. I got the feeling while watching it that it wasn't exactly sanctioned.
Yeah. Like I felt like they were going to be like talking about these things, but not being able to say the words Darth Vader in a Star Wars documentary or something like that. Luckily that's not the case, but I definitely suspected something like that was going on.
Imagine David Prowse the entire time he's talking in this movie or this documentary. And all he's saying was, the bad guy. Like, I was the bad guy.
I was the worst. I was the best bad guy ever. So surrounding this film is this music written by Jamie Hyatt, a composer. He doesn't really have a lot of other credits under his belt on IMDb, at least, but I'm sure he's an accomplished musician.
Two credits.
Yeah, right now in the background, you can hear some of his music that we're playing right now. It's one of the pieces that stuck out to me, and it's very minimal music, usually like a guitar, bass, and drums, with a little bit of synth in there sometimes, but I really appreciated it. Kind of just layering a good foundation. It seemed to catch the mood of every scene in this. You know, when they're at celebration, it kind of picks up a little bit. When they're kind of getting dark about these actors' lives, you know, it's just, I thought that also really helped out.
I didn't notice it, to be perfectly honest. Like, the only music that I really took from it was the music that was played by Laurie Good in, you know, his little shots in the studio.
Yeah.
But, no, that's about it.
I mean, Laurie Good. Who is Laurie Good? But first, like, clarify who you're talking about right now.
Laurie Good is he was an actor in Star Wars.
He's one of the subjects in this movie.
Yeah, he was in this documentary, and that was actually kind of fun to see because I was actually aware of who Laurie Good was beforehand, which is fun because he is not a major character.
Why were you aware of him first?
Okay, well, about the time we started this podcast, actually, Laurie Good, who is a musician, put out a song called "Who Was the Stormtrooper Who Banged His Head." Who was the stormtrooper who took a crowd? Nobody knows. The jury's still out. The jury's still out. Which is a super niche song for not... I mean, like, even within the Star Wars community, like, there are few people who would even understand what the concept of the song was even talking about.
Yeah, I would argue that if you hadn't seen the movie at least like two or three times, you probably wouldn't get it.
Yeah, I mean, even then, like, you have to be paying attention. There is a shot in the initial, you know, in the first Star Wars movie where the stormtroopers are, you know, chasing after Luke and Leia. And
no, they're entering the room with R2 and C-3PO in.
Oh, really? The control room?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. You're right. Yeah, you're right. So there is the shot where all these stormtroopers are, you know, they're coming through one of those blast doors where, you know, the door comes up and the stormtroopers roll through. Except this one rushes through and doesn't duck, and he bonks his head on the door as it's being pulled up. And you wouldn't notice it. You know, they left it in the movie for a reason. Like, it was a fine shot. Nobody noticed it. They probably didn't even like catch it the first time around, and they're not going to produce reshoots for that. So it's in the movie. You can go see it. And Laurie Good is supposedly the actor who was that stormtrooper. It's impossible to say because they're all dressed exactly the same. But as time has gone on, he is the one who has been credited with that flub. And, you know, he's a good sport about it. He thinks it's funny. It makes him, you know, more unique than any of the other stormtroopers in the film, and he made a song about it. He is a songwriter, and he wrote a song about it. And around the time that we're starting this podcast, he put that song out, and he was hitting up a bunch of different shows and talking about it. And it didn't make sense for us to fit it in the show at that point, but happy to recommend it now. We'll put some links to the iTunes and whatever streaming services it's available on.
Yeah, I mean, that was a part in the documentary that kind of took me back, is that he said that other people are, you know, stepping up and claiming, and that they're the ones that hit their head.
And of course, when it came out, I think, now then, that's me, surely, that's me. There's a cutting I got here today, actually, from 1997, which is about that guy knocking his head. And I've kept it because I thought it was me. But then other people are claiming it. I suppose people would claim it, wouldn't they?
And that actually becomes kind of like, not the centerpiece of this documentary, but definitely, you know, like, a bearing in it is just there is this huge contention about wearing helmets and being an actor in Star Wars.
Yeah, definitely. that was the most interesting thing about this movie, was the way that the subjects of the film kind of talk about what makes it socially acceptable to be going to cons, which was kind of like the big focal point of this thing, I think. How all of these actors are going to cons and they do the autograph thing, and that's how a lot of these people make a majority of their money. You know, they get paid for autographs and meet and greets and photos and all that stuff. And with somebody like Laurie Good, like, it's interesting to hear somebody who, you know, and he went through a lot of trouble. I think he went through some addiction issues. Is that right?
Yeah. He hurt himself and then got hooked on Valium and
oh, that's
things.
Right. Yeah. He was prescribed something.
15 years
of
addiction. Yeah.
You know, tough life, but like, you know, somebody who even through all of that, like, holds, his role in this movie so important to the point where other people claiming credit for a literal mistake is like a point of pride. Like, that's something that he needs to keep as his own, because it's something that distinguishes him from the rest and, you know, solidifies the fact that he was in this movie rather than, you know, all of these other people who can't necessarily prove that they're under the buckets. You know, it's hard to say I was in Star Wars and have people believe it, because, you know, a lot of these people aren't being credited at the end of the movie. They're not in the scrolling credits. They're not on IMDb today. So for these people to, you know, work so hard decades later to maintain their claim to fame, so to speak, in these films and their minor roles, it is a fascinating thing. And that's what I found most interesting about this documentary, I think.
Well, it goes back and forth, because you have these characters that have their faces shown. Who's the one, what's his name on my list here? Angus McInnes.
It's a great name, though.
Yeah, I doubt anybody knows that name, but,
I mean, he has to be Irish, right? I don't remember this guy necessarily, like, I don't remember his accent, but...
He was not Irish. He was very,
really?
Yeah, he had a very American accent.
Oh, was he the Texas guy?
No.
He's like,
just hold on
a few more seconds. Was that him?
No, this is the Y-wing pilot from the Death Star trench run. So he gets blown up. But he's the guy who was flying the Y-wing in that trench. Yeah, very American, bald, shaved head in this. He had a couple other roles. He was in Judge Dredd, also the original one with Stallone.
That's cool.
So yeah, pick that one up and just never watch it. But anyway, he is someone who had his face in the movie, and he recounts, you know, being at conventions and having people walk by him and not really recognize him, and him being like, people are online to see Jeremy Bullock, who played Boba Fett. You know, Boba Fett, you never see Boba Fett's face for the entire film, the entire saga. You never see it. I mean, you could argue that you do in Episode 2, but not really. But in the original trilogy, speaking of that, like, Boba Fett never gets unmasked. You never see who's under it. But Boba Fett is arguably one of the coolest characters in the entire series, or one of the most worshipped, at least by the fan base. And you see Jeremy Bullock walking on the street, you would never be like, there he is, Boba Fett. You know, you'd have to be, you know, seeking him out, you know, knowing who he was beforehand. And that's kind of a point of contention for McInnes.
It's something that's just driven everybody that's got a face in the movie. It's driven them. Every one of us crazy. Every single one of us. If you're recognizable, nobody wants to know about you. If you had a tin pot in your head, then I can't, you know, it's beyond me. I still can't figure it out.
Well, yeah, that guy was kind of interesting. I do remember some of his things, because he was talking about the shots that they were doing for the trench run, just in like the cockpit. And,
yeah, well,
and how like he came to the set like knowing all of his lines, but he didn't like know them.
He knew them in sequence.
Yeah, he didn't know them like out of order, which is what they wanted. You know, that's like a completely like weird thing for a director to even ask, but like, he literally didn't know. Didn't he have to like read off cue cards or something?
Yep. He because I mean, their big thing is that they use the same cockpit for every fighter scene. So they would just like flip one actor in, one actor out. So he would just jump into the cockpit and he didn't know the lines out of sequence. Like, so they were just, you know, they were just asking him to, which is weird. I don't know why he couldn't just play the scene out. But like, yeah, they were just, he only has a few lines like, oh, check things like switching to auxiliary targeting system or like whatever, you know. And yeah, he the way he talks in this documentary, he's so self-conscious about his performance. And something, I guess maybe it's a thing that all artists do. I mean, I know I do it when I play music. It's just like you're very self-critical about everything you do.
It was just a nightmare. I mean, it just turned into a shitstorm.
And he's like that with this bit part in Star Wars. He's just very, like, he talks about how he just like was flop sweating in the cockpit.
And I started sweating. So I had a makeup artist there with a mop. I mean, I was sweating. Buckets. It was just, I was drenched.
So he laid the script out on his left and right leg, and he's just looking down.
There's no performance in that sense at all going on.
And if you watch the footage from the movie again, you see, like, yeah, he's looking down while he's talking, but I would imagine that he's a fighter pilot, and he's just, like, looking at all the knobs in front of him and, like, hitting things. You know, that's just, no one would ever think twice about his performance being less than what was needed. But he is just so hard on himself.
And of course they killed me. Which means no sequel, kid.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, you had to think of it from his point of view in hindsight, though, because, you know, he didn't expect Star Wars to be this massive thing. And now, in hindsight, he's like, wow, like, my career could have been really different had maybe I, you know, done this small part just a little bit better. Because when Star Wars got big, like, I'm sure people were looking at the people in Star Wars, and maybe they weren't looking at Angus's character, but
what did he think he could have done better in that performance, though?
Like, he doesn't know. He's like, well, it's just that what if. It's that intangible what if.
It is a what if, but you have to be logical about it and say, like, okay, his character's function was to literally fly into the trench, miss the shot, and die to show the stakes and make room for Red 5, you know, Luke, to come in. And he fulfilled that, you know?
Yeah.
And for someone to beat themselves up, and maybe I'm just exaggerating now, maybe he exaggerated for the documentary, you know, it was just like, I mean, maybe it was just a story, just him saying, like, oh, I forgot my lines. But he seemed to take it really hard. And I think he did everything that could have been asked of him, and there's no reason to doubt yourself in that situation, you know?
Yeah. Angus was the bald gentleman, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I recall him being really bitter. As the movie went on, it showed him being more and more bitter, specifically about, like, the people that would show up at the cons that weren't, you know, shown, you know, on screen with their faces and all.
Yeah. Well, he became like a restaurateur, or like maybe just a restaurant owner, after, you know, Star Wars happened and he had a few more things. And he said he was doing like 2 to 3 projects a year. And then after he did Judge Dredd, which was like, you know, they showed a clip from it in the movie, and it's just a part, you know, he's just playing like some police dude or some army dude. I don't really know. It says one line or two lines, something like that. And he just realized that, like, oh, this is like, I'm getting older. I can't really do this very well anymore. And that's where the bitterness comes from, is just me, like, him realizing, like, oh, I didn't become a star, I guess. And everybody, that's kind of a constant through all of these characters. Maybe not all of them. We'll get to some of those. But that how seriously they take themselves as actors, which is not a bad thing. It's like, you know, if you're going to be an actor, take yourself seriously and take pride in it.
They juxtaposed that specific guy with another guy who's actually my favorite in the entire movie.
I know.
I love this guy. This guy looks so familiar to me. Like, I thought for sure when I saw him on screen, I'm like, he's been in something else.
Yeah. You know what it was?
What was it?
You think he's David Brent from The Office, The English Office.
No, I don't think he's Ricky Gervais.
We're talking about Derek Lyons, right?
No, I'm talking... No, Derek Lyons, he is David Brent from The Office, for sure. No, I was talking about John Chapman.
Okay, John Chapman. Okay.
Who was, like, super jolly. I just loved him as a person. I thought he was, like, super, super cool, super nice.
Well, you're right, yeah. Derek Lyons and John Chapman are two characters that get juxtaposed pretty closely. They're ones that are kind of in opposition. The reason being, I believe, is Chapman and Derek Lyons are two characters that did not have any lines in Star Wars, but were featured in it.
Yeah,
not featured, but were extras essentially. And that's where McGinnis draws the line. Is he just says that, like,
we had a sort of rule, the Star Wars guys, that if you got a credit in the movie, then you should be there. If you don't have a credit in the movie, then you're not a performer. And extras, I'm afraid, you know, extras don't count. They're not acting. They're just there.
And what is Boba Fett doing there? You know, like, I don't know. What is David Prowse doing there? I know David Prowse did an amazing job and did everything. You know, he said every single line. But, like, by that logic, you know, it just doesn't seem, you know, like a great way to feel. But tell me more about John Chapman. Let's go back to him for a second.
Well, John Chapman, like, apart from just being like a like the kind of guy that you just want to know, like, he just seems like a fun guy to know.
Yeah, he's really nice.
He was really, like, it sounds like he's always just been really funny. And it seemed like he got along really well with Mark Hamill on set, and they were kind of buddy-buddy at the time. John Chapman was the guy that, like, during the very last scene of Star Wars in the, you know, the medal ceremony, right before the Wookiee gets
Home who's listening, that's in reference to how Chewbacca does not get a medal. And I do not approve of the word in this.
Yeah, I'm sorry. You can edit that. You can put a bleep in there. So he's in the scene at the end where Chewbacca doesn't get his medal, and you know, it's just like these scores of people, you know, lined up, all these like rebel soldiers, wherever the hell all these people came from. They're all like lined up. They all have like their helmets on with their visors. And this guy decided that he wanted to be a little bit different. He thought, well, you know what? They can't see one person without his visor in this gigantic sea of people. So he lifted his visor up, and there was a cute little story about, you know, interaction that he and Mark Hamill had during the shooting of that scene. But I guess like his visor like fell down on him, which is kind of hilarious. And he just seemed like a fun guy. But yeah,
he chipped his tooth on the visor. That's what happened.
Did he really? Oh my gosh, that's that's funny. But I just recall like him talking about you know, going to these cons, like people didn't. Was he the guy that like went to the shop to like trade in these like little
that's
Star
him.
Wars figures or something? Yeah. So he goes to the store and he's trading the figure. He saw these figures in the store and he mentioned that he was in the movie. He's like, oh, I was in Star Wars.
Somebody recognized him and said, no, you're in Star Wars. You're a rebel pilot. Oh my gosh! Like,
no, because he wasn't a rebel pilot.
He was. Yeah.
Was he?
Yeah.
Oh, well,
he's in the room, I think. I there's so many characters in this documentary,
it's hard to pin them down,
and they're all very English, most of them, so they're all gray-haired English men, white men, and, you know, white men in general, just, we all look the same.
So but the point of it was, you know, he like said, oh, well, you know, I was in Star Wars, and he was talking about that, and the guy, the shop owner, whoever, sort of told him, well, you should go to the conventions, you know, and he ended up doing the conventions. He started doing these things, and that's where, you know, his story kind of intersects with McGinnis's story, because, you know, they're going to all these same conventions, or at least that's the way that the documentary made it seem. And they kind of took Angus's side of the story, where he's saying that these people without lines are coming, and they're, you know, they're kind of like stepping on our turf. And this guy, like, he didn't want any trouble. He just thought it was cool that, like, people thought that it was interesting that he was in Star Wars. You know, it was a fun experience for him. And that's what he was doing it for. And he eventually just stopped doing it because, you know, there was all this, like, weird Star Wars
shade. People were casting shade on him.
Yeah, just drama. Like, who needs it? And he just didn't want any part of it. So he kind of dropped out of that.
Do you think, like, Angus McGinnis, like, just came up to Chapman and was like, hey man, like, I'll see you outside in like 5 minutes, I'm gonna beat the crap out of you. Just like, just threatening them to beat him up outside the school after lunch. Be like, get out of here.
I like to think that John Chapman is a regular at Angus McGinnis's restaurant and he just doesn't even know
they just hate each other so much. They just drinks bitterly at his bar and Angus McGinnis serves him. I mean, so there's John Chapman, who you describe him as like a jolly dude. And then we talked about the David Brent-esque man, Derek Lyons. And
okay, this guy is unreal. He doesn't even seem like a real person.
I think I was looking down at my phone the first time I watched this, because I did rewatch this recently to you know, grab some audio clips you're going to hear and in this episode. And I was watching it, and I caught this montage that I missed the first time around. Do you remember the montage of Derek Lyons?
Yes, and oh my gosh, this montage is hilarious. It's he invented his own kind of like martial art.
Tai Chi-esque type thing.
Yeah, it's like a Tai Chi kind of thing where, you know, basically you're just kind of like standing still and lifting your legs up and flailing your arms around a little bit.
And this montage, you just have him running along like a nature trail in the English countryside. And he is just going to town on this tree. He is just kicking. His legs go above his head. And this is like, again, David Brent from The Office, like a portly little man. This is before Ricky Gervais lost the weight. And he's just kicking above his head in like a tracksuit and just like hitting this tree. And this music is playing in the background, the one that I played earlier, I think. And it's just like, it is so funny, but it's so sweet at the same time. He is. It's like it's this guy, like many of the actors in this documentary, takes himself very seriously, but he takes himself seriously as an extra. He is essentially, I feel like he's the character in like that Ricky Gervais based his character in Extras off of. Like, this is a person who is just a guy in the background of many, many movies.
I did The Shining, Quadrophenia, Absolute Beginners, the TV show The Bill, Superman 2, 3, and 4. I worked on Krull, Secret Diary of a Cool Girl.
Just a bunch of like background things, just like him standing there, the camera freezes and zooms in on him in the corner, and then you have a montage of him just talking about his Tai Chi and punching trees. But I just thought it was really sweet, you know. He talks about how, yeah, go.
When they first brought him on screen, I'm like, okay, this guy is a little weird. And then they show that montage, and I thought, man, ironically, this reminds me of one thing and one thing only.
What?
Star Wars Kid.
Oh no.
It reminded me of Star Wars Kid alone in his garage with a broom handle and just flailing it around and just like thinking that he's so cool. And, you know, I think it's great. I'm sure that like his martial art really centers him, but he's an odd guy. And I thought that part was just, it was so funny, and it didn't fit in the movie at all. It totally stood out, but so did he. Like, even before they showed any of that or talked about like what he's done since, just hearing him speak, he kind of stood out. He's definitely he's an extra. He's a cool side character that, like, I don't even know if I would have. What did he play in Star Wars? Was he just like one of the guards or something?
His role, I think, was rebel guard or something like that. But if you want to see him in this movie, freeze the frame when Luke, Han, and Chewie turn around to look at the audience. He's in like the top right corner of the screen, just like his face, just his face. That's what the freeze frame was, and they just zoom in on him, you know.
Like, those freeze frame zoom in things, those were weird. Like, obviously you can't get like great photos of a lot of these characters.
It's like a loop. It's like a GIF loop they have it on, essentially, in this documentary.
It zooms up to a point, and then it like zooms out three steps, zooms in three steps, zooms out three steps, and it's just kind of like this weird vibrate-y thingy.
I liked it. I thought it was a very good tool to show. It kind of highlights the insignificance, but the significance in the documentary of these characters.
Yeah, definitely. Because like the best shot you can get is just like this blurry frame.
Right. And that's what these people are making their living off of now, some of them. And that is what Derek Lyons is doing. He goes to the conventions and gets, you know, people, he signs people's stuff. And I think that's what Angus McGuinness was so angry about. He seemed very bitter.
Some of the other actors can be a bit kind of hurtful and think, why are you doing this? You know, why are you at a convention with me? I'm this and I'm that. I was a named character. And you weren't on the credits, or you're uncredited, or all this rubbish, you know. And they get just kind of jealous that you're taking a piece of their action, you know. It's all to do with money, you know.
So okay, we've talked about some of the like lesser known characters, but there were some like bigger players in this documentary too.
I mean, I think of the biggest one being David Prowse. Is that
for sure? Yeah, definitely. David Prowse was in this. Jeremy Bullock was in this. They're probably two of the more well known. But before we kind of get to those, because I think they have stories of their own, can we talk about Greedo for a second?
Greedo. That would be Mr. Paul Blake.
Yeah. This is interesting because Greedo is a well known character. Probably more well known after the special edition edits were made, just because of the Han Greedo who shot first situation.
Wow, that must be that. Oh man, he must kill it at the cons.
Oh, I bet. Yeah, I'm sure he does. But you know, like he's also a masked character, so he does have lines. But was he the one who actually said the lines?
I doubt it. I mean, I think everything was done later on in voiceover. Yeah,
it's up later. Well, it is interesting, and I thought he had one. Interesting anecdote, and you actually put this in the notes here, so I'm glad you did that. why don't you tell the funny anecdote that he actually told in this documentary?
I mean, just like John Chapman's stories and everything like that, all these people are very jolly, and I could not do justice to these stories. So I'll give you the gist of it, which is just that, you know, he shows up on set first day, and he just asks the first person he sees on set to grab him a cup of coffee. And that person comes back with his coffee, goes and grabs it, and he goes, oh, well, I'm waiting, I'm supposed to meet George Lucas here. You know, he's the director of this movie, and we're supposed to talk about the role or whatever in the scene. And the guy goes, oh, I'm George. You know, hey, it's me. I'm George. You know.
That's so cool. I love that. I mean, like, he just showed up to a set, and didn't he? I think he showed up to like the set where the Millennium Falcon was just kind of like parked or something, and George Lucas was just kind of like, you know, like toying around, just kind of like milling around the set, like messing with stuff, and he just kind of like walked up and
he took him for like a grip or something like that. Yeah. Just somebody just messing around with the stuff, just
thought,
on stage.
Thought he was an aide. I think that's funny.
Yeah, his story kind of, he actually might be one of the more successful people, like, mm-hmm. I don't know, like, based relative, I guess, you know, to David Prowse and company, but Paul Blake Greedo, he went on to become a soap opera star in England.
Yeah, which is, I mean, that's successful in its own right. Probably nothing that most of the people who are listening to the show have ever seen. I've never seen anything that he was in after Star Wars, but you know, you can make a great living and really have an enjoyable career as an actor on stage or on, you know, a television show that a lot of people watch in the middle of the day.
Yeah, he seemed pretty okay with it. Like, he was hesitant to become a soap opera star at first, it felt like, but then he was like, oh, well, it's paying the bills, and I think he saw himself as like having a brighter future, or I guess, I don't know, like a more respected, I don't know. I feel like everybody gets to start on soaps though, so I feel like it's not like he shouldn't have been as ashamed of what he was doing as he was. But I understand it. I understand it at the same time as just being hard on yourself.
Yeah.
Who else do we want to talk? Oh, we talked a bit about in a previous episode about whether Biggs was alive or not. The person who played Biggs in Star Wars.
Oh, man.
Garrick Hagen.
In real life, Biggs is really cool.
Yeah, he's very alive.
He's like an eclectic. When you look at him, you kind of think of him as like a scholarly kind of guy. You know, he kind of seems like somebody who would be like a playwright or something. Like in the shots that is in, I think they took place in his home. He has like a little studio. He's got a lot of books everywhere. A lot of cool, like, you know, stuff that it seems that he's picked up from travels from, you know, in different countries and stuff. Very worldly kind of looking guy, but his hobby is the most interesting part of him.
What was his hobby? I forget.
He collects and paints dioramas from like wars.
Oh,
I can't remember which war it was, but they spent a bunch of time.
It's like Kevin Spacey in House of Cards.
Yes. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah, exactly. Like Kevin Spacey in House of Cards. He has all these like little die cast, you know, soldiers and horses, and he sets up these dioramas and hand paints all of these little people. And I thought that was hilarious. They're just like interviewing him. Obviously they have like the cutaway shots, and then they do the voiceover while showing him doing what he does in his time off and in his retirement. And he is just really into painting little tiny figurines, which I think is fun.
He was also another person that was kind of middle of the road in terms of conventions and attending them and kind of what he saw it as. I mean, there are people in this documentary, he just understood what the conventions were. And his description was it was an amicable exchange of courtesies, meaning that like he sees himself as like kind of a living time capsule for Star Wars. And by existing, he is providing a service to his fans, or not his fans, to the fans of the series. It's a similar, I feel like, to going to like a museum, one of those, the traveling Star Wars exhibit that shows up in a lot of cities with all the memorabilia, the gowns, you know, mm-hmm. the blaster pistols, kind of just being able to stand in the same room as something that's been in the sea. And he objectifies himself in that way, but he also gets to provide, you know, stories from the set, and he allows people to be close to something that they would never ever get to be close to otherwise.
That's a good thought. I mean, obviously he's very well spoken and he's probably given it a great deal of thought, but that's definitely what conventions are for the most part. I mean, Right. Nowadays, conventions are very much a place where you go find out about the latest stuff. So you can go buy toys. You can buy, you know, exclusive Funko figures at conventions. You can see, you know, trailers for Star Wars movies before anybody else. You can see panels with the people who make the movies, which is interesting, you know, in today's landscape where they are currently making Star Wars movies. But for a long time, you know, conventions where Star Wars people show up, it's just a place to meet people that were there when this thing happened. And that is an interesting thing. I think that's
he was really humble about it too. Like, he wasn't like, I mean, Derek Lyon, and sweet as he is, he's very full of himself in a very sweet way. But, you know, like, he's like, he likes to talk about how he's in Star Wars, you know, that thing. He feels like he isn't, Derek Lyon's probably feels important, that he feels like it's important that he is at these conventions. And Garrick just seemed to be like, hey, they want me here, I'm gonna be here for them, you know, it pays the bills.
Yeah.
Who else do you want to talk about? Fixer.
Oh yeah, Fixer from the cutscenes.
Anthony Forrest played a character from Tatooine named Fixer. He was kind of like he's in like those extra big scenes that got deleted, and that character, as you are aware, and many people who are not understanding or not recognizing the name Fixer, that character was cut from the film. They kind of broke the line. They kind of broke the news to Anthony that happened, and he still kind of got something out of it. He became the stormtrooper, right, that said, these aren't the droids you're looking for, I think. Again, his face is not in the film. He's one of those characters that just doesn't get in it, but it's probably
more recognizable, honestly. I mean, yeah. Like, Fixer didn't have... if he had lines, he didn't have many of them. I've only watched those deleted scenes a couple times, and, I mean, he wasn't a primary character.
Not at all. No, he's just, like, somebody hanging around Luke and Biggs.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, that's one of the other characters. Obviously, I want to pay tribute to Pam Rose, too, in this podcast.
Pam Rose, she's an interesting lady. She's actually very much active on Facebook. She's a member of a couple Star Wars groups that I'm a member of as well. Very cool lady who went on to seemingly have a very interesting life in various clubs.
Maybe parallel to her character in Star Wars.
Yeah, on Facebook it says that she was a pit boss at a London dance club. So, I mean, she's got to be relatively tough, but I imagine if you're hanging out with the CD crowd at the cantina, then you're probably in good shape.
Yeah, her kind of epilogue in this was that she's, you know, getting her first house or something like that. And you know, so it's good to see the successes, you know, helping them out in life.
Yeah. You know, before we get to the final big characters, I think, you know, Bullock and Prowse are probably the biggest names in this thing. Let's go back to that thing you brought up at the very beginning with the action figures, because that was kind of like a motif throughout this entire thing. When they introduced a new character, I think there was like a title screen where it said the name of the actor and their character, but it also showed a shot of their action figure, which is kind of a cool thing. And I think they talked about that a little bit in the movie about how, you know, these are super minor characters, but forever there are physical manifestations of their small part in this big thing as Kenner Star Wars toys. I just thought that was really cool. And, you know, with Pam Rose, she's a good example of that. She didn't get one till much later on, but there is an action figure of Pam Rose's character from the cantina, which is cool. You know, like, it's a super minor role. And even decades later, when, you know, Hasbro or whoever picked up the license at that point decided to make some more toys, some legacy toys for the first movie, they decided to include Pam Rose's character, which is probably something she didn't expect. But it's a cool thing to have. Imagine having a Star Wars toy made for you, Mike. Not one that just kind of looks like you, like the Cassian Andor ones that your girlfriend's been collecting, but a real Mike Comite Star Wars action figure. Wouldn't that be neat?
Well, let's not bring up her Cassian fetish in this in this podcast. But yeah, no, that's true. That's a good point. Yeah, I think that it's not living proof. It's plastic proof that it's concrete proof. You know, like metaphorically speaking, concrete proof that like you were in this. You know, I mean, they don't always nail down likenesses in character in action,
especially
figures
at that point.
Yeah, those plastic molds had not come very far. I would even argue the Cassian one that she has looks more like me than it does Diego Luna. But
yeah, oh my gosh, the Poe Dameron ones are terrible. I won't even buy them. I actually bought one and I returned it. I couldn't keep it. I'm like, this doesn't even look like Poe Dameron, and I don't even want to own it.
All right. Aside from those action figures. But yeah, I mean, I think that just like that's just something you have, you know, that to like, if you bought your own action figure and you were in Star Wars, you could be like, that was me. You know, somebody out there is collecting those action figures, you know, maybe Jared from one of our previous episodes, and you know, someone to have someone seeking your action figure, that would be, it's a very flattering thing. And so I those are very important to this film and to these actors and actresses.
I think it would have been cool to have the guy that played Yak Face in this documentary.
But think of the amount. Do you think they had more than these subjects in this film? Do you think they had? I bet. Do you think these are narrowed down?
Well, I don't know, because I don't go to the cons. I don't really see the list of names of people that are there signing as certain characters or whatever they happen to do.
There's so many characters in that cantina scene that they're
Well,
I mean,
of course, but like, how many of those people think about Star Wars in the way that these people do? Like, a lot of those people were probably just like normal people who like. They were just like getting a quick paycheck. Some of those people are probably dead. I imagine the pool is actually relatively low.
I don't know. I mean, from the way that Laurie Good was talking, you know, there's a lot of people jumping up claiming credit first to be stormtroopers in films. I think it really just, based on previous research that I've done on like how documentaries get made, a lot of times a crew will like choose 10 subjects and narrow it down to the 5 most interesting. I watched like a documentary on love or something like that and dating or something in New York City at one point. And, you know, the filmmakers came out and did a Q&A afterwards and just described how they took, you know, 7 people and narrowed it down to 4 subjects for the documentary. They took whoever's footage was the most interesting. And so that's what I was curious to know, if like maybe there were more people that they interviewed for this movie that just got cut. And that's just like, how much of a slap in the face would that be, do you think, to be like, to be number one, just relegated to being an extra or walk on in Star Wars, and then finally just becoming just cut out of the documentary about the people that got cut out of Star Wars.
I don't know. I feel like it was probably a fairly small pool to begin with. I mean, they really did focus on several people for the most part. And Pam Rose was not in this very much.
No, she wasn't.
I don't think the guy that played Fixer was in this a whole lot. It was primarily focused on people, you know, that had a lot to say about it. People that were more heavily involved in it, probably than anybody else in the con scene. So, you know, Derek Lyons, Angus, Jeremy Bullock. Like, Jeremy wasn't even in it that much.
He was like a reveal, I feel like. Yeah. I feel like if there was a twist in a documentary, he was the twist, just him existing in it, because they bring him in really late in the game. You see his action figure brought in like probably 3/4 of the way through the movie, maybe like 2/3. Jeremy Bullock, how old is he now? Like, he's got to be like 65, 70 almost.
Oh, no. I'd imagine he's older than that. He's got to be in his late 70s.
Oh, all right. Well,
I'd imagine.
Jeremy Bullock, Boba Fett, he is introduced in this movie when they start talking about the cons, because they're like, oh, well, Jeremy, he's like killing it at the cons right now. And that's like we talked before about helmets versus no helmets, you know, face, no face. He is definitely a no face person in Star Wars.
Well, that's purely because of the character. I mean, there's, you know, if someone says, you know, how come you're so busy? I say, well, it's because it's Boba Fett. I can't say any more than that. It's not my fault. There's an awful lot of guys who work so hard on that film, played stormtroopers, played this, played that, and bloody good they were at it as well. But it's occasionally there is a hierarchy.
And there's just one really awesome anecdote. I think it's a general anecdote, it's not a specific one. Something he probably experiences a lot. He's like, yeah, a fan will be grilling me about, you know, just like, Jeremy, when you turned your head that way when Darth Vader speaks that line, like, what was that motivated by? And it's like, oh, that was motivated by me wondering if it was time for lunch yet. like that level of cynicism is what drives Jeremy Bullock for this entire documentary, probably for his entire career now. Like, he is, you know, he's an accomplished actor. But where he kind of lands is that he's just going to cons and making money from signatures and things like that and selling merch. And his general thought is that he would rather live off of that bit in Star Wars than doing like Life Alert commercials, which is, you know, just like he said, like, he mentions doing a commercial for an elderly folks home, which he said wasn't too bad. But yeah, he doesn't like playing like an infirm person, you know, just someone who's like, shows his age.
Yeah, it looks like he's in a lot of like what he is doing these days is mostly like really bad science fiction movies. It's just kind of like that token guy, kind of like, I think the guy that there's a guy that played Freddy Krueger. I don't know if he's like the main dude who played Freddy or one of the guys, that played him in one of the subsequent movies, but he kind of appears in a bunch of other, like, you know, B or C horror flicks, just as kind of like the token character so that they can say, you know, featuring so-and-so from Nightmare on Elm Street, you know what I mean? I feel like maybe Jeremy Bulk is kind of becoming that guy in addition to what he does at the cons. Like, he's just kind of appearing in sci-fi flicks as very minor roles, probably as like, you know, space admirals of various descriptions and stuff like that.
He's very aware, you know, yeah, about how little he had to do for this movie.
Mm-hmm.
But he's also aware of how important it is. I mean, he seems to take the signing game pretty seriously.
That you treat the fans with great respect. Very important.
His stories about signing, like, he has his own pens. He has, like, his very specific set of pens.
Different colors that people can choose.
Yep, exactly. Boba Fett colors. And but he mentions, like, at one point, he's like, he ruined somebody's poster.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
He said, like, yeah, like, he just grabbed a pen and this fan comes up with a poster that's been signed by, like, everyone, like Carrie Fisher, Harrison Ford, Mark Hamill, David Prowse. Like, everybody's got their signatures on this Star Wars poster, and he starts signing his name and his pen explodes on it. You know, like that kind of thing.
Gosh.
I think the context of what he's trying to say is that, like, he picked the right pen color. Like, he let the fan pick the pen color so the fan is not upset that Jeremy Bullock ruined their lifetime of gathering Star Wars autographs.
Yeah, which is a nice thing. I mean, that is a very aware thing to do. I mean, for somebody that collects autographs, I'm sure that's very important. I don't understand that, but I'm sure if there were, you know, somebody's listening to this that is like a autograph hunter, I bet that's like a huge deal.
Mm.
Because if you have like a, you know, if you have a Star Wars poster and you're trying to get all these signatures and everybody is signing with a silver pen or something, you don't want Mark Hamill to be signing in black, because you might not be able to see it because it's like a black photo or something like that. You know what I
right,
mean?
Right, right, right.
So having that color, like being able to be visible so that you can, you know, point to all those when your friends come over and they want to, oh, here's Harrison Ford's signature. I accosted him on Rodeo Drive.
is that your LA reference right there?
Yeah.
Good, good. I mean, that kind of brings us to kind of the center, like the exalted king of this documentary, which is David Prowse.
Yeah, David Prowse. Interesting guy. I very much like David Prowse. I think
he's
extraordinarily likable, but he does have a history and, you know, he has at some point upset a lot of people, and that's kind of like sullied his image, at least maybe from like Lucasfilm standpoint.
That could explain his, like, how even-keeled he is and understanding. Because, I mean, out of all the characters in Star Wars, I would argue that David Prowse is the one who has the most right to be angry for kind of what the trajectory of his role in the series was.
Mm.
Because, you know, he spoke every line of dialogue. There's plenty of footage on YouTube of David Prowse's lines coming through that muffled helmet. And, you know, he was to be later overdubbed by
James Earl Jones.
Yeah. And you know what? Watching this documentary, you see no bitterness. You see a little bit of like kind of like, oh, well, kind of like that kind of feeling.
Yeah.
But he's never like, he doesn't have like Angus's kind of fire about like who has the right to be doing what or like how screwed over he was. You can tell he'd certainly like to be a part of some of the like celebrations, but he's been barred from them. Is that
they have a convention sort of once every couple of years, what they call a celebration convention, and unfortunately I've been barred for some obscure reason. And also Disney Star Wars weekends, I've been barred from doing the Disney Star Wars weekend as well.
That seems to be the story. I don't know how much of that's true. You can't really verify that. Like, there's nobody that you can call and say, hey, is he actually allowed here? Like, there's no verification for that, but that seems to be the story. And
Prowse even says, he says,
ask Mr. Lucas. Yeah. But it's, I've obviously upset him at some stage or other.
Well, who's going to get access to George Lucas? You know?
Right. Right.
Go find him at the Panda Express in the mall where he's eating Chinese food. Yeah, you seen that picture?
Yeah.
Just George Lucas eating like cheap mall Chinese food.
Nothing wrong with that, man.
Wrong with it, but it's just a hilarious picture of just.
Yeah. Oh, yes, could I get the General Gao's chicken?
I love your impression of George Lucas because
it's totally ripped off. It's ripped off of We Hate Movies guy. They do an excellent George Lucas. That's there.
I was gonna say it kind of sounds like Kermit the Frog.
No, We Hate Movies just has a great Sebulba bit. Everyone go listen to every single one of their podcasts because somehow George Lucas ends up in every one of their podcasts requesting that Sebulba be a part of any special effect. It's so good.
Well, with David Prowse, in comparison to Angus, for example, Angus, obviously, he went on to do other things. He was in a couple of movies. Like you said, he was in Dread. He also started a restaurant business, I think, with his wife. So that kept him pretty busy. But with David Prowse, like, he went on and he had a decent career. I mean, he was in a lot of movies.
He was like a strong man, right?
Yeah, like, he was like Mr. Universe.
Yeah, he's a very strong man. He was the universe's strong man.
I mean, he's a very strong man. His story is very interesting. He came up into this like bodybuilding thing with a lot of adversity. A lot of people told him that he couldn't do it because of his body type and that he just wasn't built for it, but you know, he kind of was in a way, and he kind of set the tone for the way a lot of bodybuilding came after him. If you look at a lot of the bodybuilders who became Mr. Universe after David Prowse, like, they look a lot more like him than they do people before him. Like, he kind of changed that game, and I can't really speak too much to that because, you know, I'm a specky git and I weigh 145 pounds and I can't lift a bar above my head on a bench. But
you and me both, buddy. You and me both.
But with David Prowse, he's really made the Star Wars thing his life. I mean, he did a bunch of movies after that, but he's not going to cons as these other characters. He's going to cons as David Prowse, Darth Vader. You know, he is Darth Vader. I mean, James Earl Jones did the voice, and that's great. But like, the reason that Darth Vader was so intimidating to me was only half the voice. The other half was like the intimidation of, you know, the scale of him. You know, David Prowse is a gigantic person. You know, the scale of him, the mannerisms, like the forceful, you know, finger wags and the way that he strode down the hall. Like, he is Darth Vader. And it's unfortunate that, you know, whatever happened happened. And, you know, there are the stories of how he spoiled Return of the Jedi before the movie even came out.
No, Empire. He ruined Empire.
Oh, yeah. He ruined Empire.
Is that true? I don't think we've done the research that I've done on that. If anybody hasn't heard the story, the gist of that is that he was doing, this is reported by like a small newspaper, like a local newspaper or something like that. I forget. We can probably dig this story up somewhere and post it in the notes if you're curious. But the gist of it is he was giving a talk and he revealed that Darth Vader is Luke Skywalker's father prior to the movie coming out.
Yeah. In retrospect, I don't think that would be enough to get him barred. I think there was something else at play, probably something that he said publicly at some point, the way that he was acting at cons. Like, it's hard. Who knows? He's not going to say it now. He doesn't want to dredge that back up at this point. Like, okay, maybe he's barred from Lucasfilm official events. So be it. You know, let's just water under the bridge that as much as possible and just kind of forget about it. He doesn't want to make that a part of who he is, obviously. He's very interactive on Twitter, which I think is really cool. He's everywhere. He's constantly signing autographs at conventions, and he sells them on his website as well for people that want them. He's a likable guy. I think David Prowse is an interesting fellow, and he seems very nice.
Even more interesting is kind of what he says is his favorite thing he's ever done. Because, you know, this is a Star Wars documentary, but he says that his favorite role has been his work as Captain Cross, which was kind of like a PSA character, superhero, that would tell children to look both ways before they cross the road. And he said that was much more rewarding than Star Wars has been. I mean, monetarily speaking, I feel like Star Wars probably did a little better for him. But he said that, like, he reduced, you know, traffic accidents. He reduced the amount of kids getting killed by cars, you know, and he said that is his favorite role. It's been awesome. Captain Cross. Yeah, so
what a nice guy.
You can probably find some Captain Cross stuff on YouTube as well. But yeah, he's just this guy that appears and tells kids to look both ways. The videos are very funny. Just, you know, as a New Yorker, just someone who just is used to walking into traffic on the regular every single day, regardless of the traffic signal. That is definitely just good to see. It's a good reminder to look both ways, kids. Everybody look both ways before you cross that street.
I think David Prowse is interesting because of or at least the course of his life is interesting, being so active as he is in conventions and public appearances, because, you know, back when Star Wars came out and it became big, there was a guy who went around and he was doing like appearances as Darth Vader and was actually eventually hired by the studio to be the official Darth Vader for basically all promotional events after the release of Star Wars. His name was Kermit Eller, as if there weren't enough people playing Darth Vader, right? his name is Kermit Eller. He was very active. In fact, like when the design for Darth Vader won an award, like an Academy Award, he was there, and he was there when it was received and everything. He was a very integral part to Star Wars and very much lesser known, in fact, than a lot of the people probably in this film. And he was going around doing all these promotional things as Darth Vader. And in the meantime, you know, David Prowse is probably doing other films and doing his, like, you know, bodybuilding thing and all this stuff. And when it comes full circle, David Prowse is now doing what this Kermit Eller guy was doing for years back when Star Wars was first coming out and kind of at its, you know, the height of conversation, at least at that point. You know, it has its cult following now, but it was massive. It was in theaters for months and months and months, and this guy was constantly on the road, and he had Vader groupies, like people that would come up to him in bookstores for signings and stuff, and, you know, saying like, "Your breathing turns me on," and, you know, just like weird things. Like, he was Darth Vader. He probably felt like he was Darth Vader just as much as David Prowse was, because, you know, he kind of had the same role. He wasn't on film, but he was doing all the public appearances. And even though Kermit Eller was not in this documentary, I think it's interesting to just kind of like compare what Kermit Eller was doing as Darth Vader then and what David Prowse is doing now as sort of similar. And it's just weird that they're kind of on the same playing field today, and both of them being this, you know, monolithic character, this gigantic pulp culture icon that is Darth Vader, and how none of, you know, neither of them really get like the due respect and the recognition from Lucasfilm and Disney that perhaps maybe they deserve. And it's just kind of a weird thing to look at somebody's life like that and to see David Prowse being as like level-headed and humble as he is. I think that's kind of a cool thing to see.
I mean, he's had a lot of time to, I guess, quote unquote, get over it.
But
he definitely seems humble and accepting, and I think because he didn't get the raw deal, you know, he definitely got, like, he's getting something out of this, and, you know, people recognize him. You and I admire him, and along with many other people. Mm-hmm. I think just when he mentions, you know, kind of what he tried to do with it, he said that he wanted to say David Prowse is Darth Vader, and they're like, well, David, can you please just make it like David Prowse as Darth Vader as mm-hmm. your thing? And he's like, no, like David Prowse is Darth Vader. Like, that's kind of, I think he knows where he stands, and he doesn't really care where anybody else stands. This Lucasfilm especially, he doesn't care what who's telling him who is Darth Vader. He knows who he is, and he knows what he did, and he's okay with it, and people respect that. So I guess this kind of brings me to my main reason for wanting to talk about this, but what is this movie? You know, what would you say this movie is? This documentary.
It's a window into a completely different mindset. It's thinking about characters that you don't think about. It's just a look at these people that have made Star Wars their life in the same way that a lot of fans have made their life, except, you know, that at some point or another, Star Wars was a part of their professional career. And whether their career went beyond that or not, Star Wars is a huge part of it. And I think it's interesting just to hear from these people that you have literally never heard of before in some cases.
Yeah. I mean, think about it more broadly, though. What is this documentary? This is a documentary that the subjects should have never gotten. you know, this is something, these are stories you never would have heard. And almost by extension, this is a documentary for every walk-on character, every extra in any film ever. This is kind of just a little microcosm of what happens in Hollywood. And by extension, most avenues of entertainment. This is the story of the people who don't get stories. This is not, you know, like Brad Pitt will get a biopic, you know. Harrison Ford, you know, is getting a whole Star Wars movie dedicated to a character that he played. You know, these characters are never going to come up again unless, you know, you do a Rogue One tribute. Like, you know, these are, and there's so many movies like Star Wars that have these bit parts in it that are never going to get a documentary. And that's what I really, that's what hit me about this film, is just that, you know, there are hundreds of thousands, I feel like, of extras that are never going to get their stories told. And they all have crazy anecdotes about running into Brad Pitt on set, or, you know, like bumping into George Clooney on Ocean's 11 or whatever. I could just go through the entire Ocean's cast. that movie alone probably has, you know, like 30,000 people that just have stories about being on set and in the movie. But in general, like, I don't know, I just, as an artist myself, you know, or a musician, an aspiring musician, whatever you want to call it, you know, my mirror neurons are firing when I'm watching this movie, and I'm kind of seeing myself in a lot of these characters and thinking about, like, the cool things that I've gotten to do for music. You know, we don't have to get into specifics, but, you know, like, I could see myself very much Derek Lyons-ing out right now and talking about places I've gone and toured or whatever, and almost like reminiscing on it as like the glory days. And, you know, I've been a side guy in a successful group before, and I'm not that successful anymore. You know, I'm not in that group anymore. And it's very bittersweet to look back on it, because just like these characters, you know, they have their action figures and they have their stills of them in the film. You know, I look back on my time doing some stuff, and I don't know. I you just wonder what lies ahead and if it's going to be as cool as what you did before.
Man, I identify with that so, so much. So much. I think a lot of people probably can. A lot of people who are probably older, in their late 20s at the very least, like, if you've done anything that, you know, you objectively find interesting, you know, if you're a music person like you or I, and we involve ourselves in the music industry in some degree, and we do something that we think is, like, really cool, that we hope that other people think is really cool, whether they do or not, like, what do you do past that? Like, when that ends, what do you do beyond that? And this is a cool look at what some people have done to kind of, you know, keep the glory days alive, so to speak. And it is interesting. I at the top of this thing, I said it wasn't necessarily, like, super entertaining, and I really don't think that it is. It's not, like, super exciting. You're not gonna, like, find out a bunch of stuff about Star Wars that you didn't know before, but you are gonna learn about people, and you're gonna learn about these people that you know, that were involved in this thing that you love, and you know, they left their mark on it in some way or another, and whether it be important to the saga, really important, because it's their story.
If you really spend the time with this movie, it'll get you to a point where you're asking yourself, am I defined by the things that I've done? And I think that's an important question to ask yourself every once in a while.
I ask myself that every single day, Mike.
I think the healthy answer to come to is no. I think it's a part of me, but I'm not defined by it.
Yeah. That's definitely where I think most people should come out of that question. Do I do that every day? No.
Awesome. Well, that wraps it up for episode 18 of Bantha Fodder. I'd like to thank you for sticking with us through this one and kind of looking at this movie that you may not have otherwise seen.
Yeah. Is it available anywhere other than Netflix?
I'm sure it's on Amazon and other venues, Hulu maybe, who knows.
Yeah, I'll take a look around. I'll put links Google to Play. Everything that I can possibly put links to here in the show notes, so you can try to get to that. It's interesting, and it's not that long, I don't think. It's a little more than an hour.
76 minutes or so, you know.
Yeah, that's not that bad. So, good thing to check out. Definitely, like, a cool thing to just put on maybe in the background while you're eating cereal or whatever Mike does in the morning before he gets ready for the day. But yeah, that's good stuff.
You can follow us at BanthaFodderFM on Twitter. My handle is also at Mike Kamate.
And mine is at Jacob Tender.
You can check out the show notes, banthafodder.fm/episode/18.
Good job.
Wow, I get that URL memorized.
Awesome. That's good. Yeah. Yeah, you can find stuff there. We'll have notes to everything there. And yeah, Mike, what's next?
Who knows, man? Who knows? Another episode. We'll see you in a little bit, guys.
Sounds good. Later.
Bye.
Oh, I forgot to mention that I built the Poe Dameron Lego set. It's awesome.